Working with Compassion International has helped Greystone Church reach our mission of knowing God and making God known. The purpose of Compassion is to release children from poverty in the name of Jesus. Compassion accomplishes this through connecting with churches in the U.S. and churches in poverty-stricken communities around the world. 8 years ago, we hosted a Compassion Sunday at Greystone Church, and we gave our members the opportunity to sponsor children living in poverty, and we partnered with a church in Juticalpa, Honduras. Over the last 8 years, we have sponsored over 1,100 children. As you can imagine, we've been able to impact those kids and their families in the name of Jesus. But what we didn't realize is how we would impact our families at Greystone Church. As some of you know, when you go on a mission trip to a foreign country, the trip ends up impacting you as much or more than those in the foreign country. This is what we've experienced with Compassion. Our families are living on mission because they are participating in the Great Commission and seeing lives change for all eternity. If you and your church would like to partner with Compassion International, I highly recommend hosting a Compassion Sunday at your church. To find out more about hosting a Compassion Sunday, go to compassion.com/family goals. Again, you can find out more information at compassion.com/family goals.
We partner with Tony Financial Services for the scripture of the week this week, and it's Colossians 1:18. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. Yes. I had to slow that down to read it, by the way, Pastor Jay, and it took me six times for all of you listening at home, but finish it up, big dog.
So we're talking about the supremacy of Christ, and our finances certainly comes under the lordship of Christ. And we appreciate Tony Financial Services for providing our scripture. They're a trusted wealth management firm that specializes in biblical financial principles and biblically responsible investing. They're proud members of the Kingdom Advisory Network. And we're just grateful for their continued partnership and helping us be good faith-based stewards.
All right, welcome into Family Goals. Special guest. The show got better, first of all. Pastor Jay is out of town, so he didn't jump in the show. Thankful. Thank God. Get on out of here. Our guest will be happy, too. Patrick Young, who played hoops at Florida. My pastor is a diehard LSU fan. Obviously, Patrick, you know I went to Georgia.
The show definitely got better. You're absolutely right.
See, there we go, man. But, man, Patrick, I think your story is super inspiring. I think people need to hear it more and more. And we're going to talk about it today. But, I mean, but before we get down the road, and if you don't know Patrick's story, man, he was in a car crash. First of all, he played basketball at the University of Florida. Really successful. Played with Billy Donovan. Probably have some good Billy Donovan stories. You know, but got in a car crash, and obviously it changed your life. And I can relate to that. Family Goals, man, we're literally trying to help families lead themselves. We're trying to help them how they put Jesus first, how they deal with adversity. So your story is awesome in setting that up. But I want to know Patrick Young growing up, man. Like your family dynamics. Yeah. Like what kind of household you grow up with siblings, the whole nine.
Well, glad you asked that because I'm in – my parents' household right now, actually doing the show with you. So that goes to show the closeness in which we still have, but I'm super grateful. My parents are integral in obviously who I am today and what I believe. Obviously I made a lot of choices on my own, but thank goodness for the foundation they put in my life after realizing, and you know, you gotta call it what it is, the consequences of sin, of doing things that are not God's way, is going to result in, you know, Pastor Joe will be the guy that I really hope to connect you with here soon. He said this the other day on his podcast. Fools try to detach actions from consequences. That's what fools do. That is, you know, a lot of people hear that word and they might be offended by a fool by that word and think something. But yeah, no, like, we all have fallen under that category of doing something that we were like, oh, I'll take care of those, deal with those consequences later. And sometimes those linger more than others. But it's my mom, my dad, Robert Young and Benita Young, and my older sister. She actually played golf at Florida State. So pretty athletic family.
Oh, the enemy.
I know. You don't got to do all that. We know. But the thing is about Florida State, like they have one thing. That's it. Like their fans have to be annoyed that there's only the song the whole time. There has like Florida and Georgia have plenty, and LSU, like a plethora, a spectrum of different things to try to like represent Chant. Their pride, right? But you know, I hope you can relate to this, David. Man, I mean, childhood wasn't perfect because we live in this world, but man, I look back and just think I had it so good. I would say one of the most interesting things about my childhood is that, you know, before this, there was school choice. You know, that was something that's fairly new, something that people have fought for a long time. You know, I was going to have to go to the neighborhood elementary school, which was Highlands, and the neighborhood middle school, Highlands Middle, and then First Coast High School. Not that those schools or places are bad, but in comparison to what I actually go through, changed the trajectory of my life. I went to, you know, my mom knew somebody at San Mateo Elementary, which got me into a college prep middle school. And then I was able to go to a college prep high school for 3 years and transferred over to Providence School here in Jacksonville, which has become a powerhouse basketball school. And also,
is that why did you transfer because of basketball?
You know, yes, but that's not the only thing. The environment, the coaching, it's a Christian school. So I got really exposed to an environment where they really cultivated a lot of that in us. I'll never forget this. Mark Brunell, he came, you know, 1 year there. Mark Brunell, his daughter was in our class, Caitlin, and he came in as a guest speaker for our Bible class. And I just remember him saying it's like, I can remember it like it was yesterday. He said, if you don't have your identity set on who you are, who you want to be, the people you want in your life, you are going to get pulled in all types of directions. It's like, you're here at Providence. This is sheltered. You are exposed to Christians and people that are like-minded, and you're going to go to college. And if you're not set in who you are, you're going to end up somewhere you never wanted to be. And that's me. You know, I got to college and all the hype, you know how it is, man. 5-star top player coming in, all this like outside. And look, I don't want to discredit those people for seeing potential in me. You can be the next Dwight Howard. You got a chance to go to the NBA, blah, 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 all this. But I think it's more vital to check character. Like, do you have a work ethic? Are you coachable? Like, none of those things can be possible if you don't put the work in and have the passion that is biblically described as suffering for something, knowing that the goal or thing that you're chasing is worth it. So I'm just so grateful, so grateful. And I'm sure you've had in your career at some point. I mean, we all like to think we had it all figured out when we were 16, 17, 18 years old.
Unfortunately.
Right. I had a Coach Donovan. He called me out in truth and love. Because my freshman year, I wasn't showing up as the person, the man that I wanted to be. And he, you know,
how did he call you out, Patrick?
I was a distraction in practice. You know, you know, guys that have been like that, they take away, you know what? You got 2 hours to practice. So you want to maximize that time. And whether it's him having to repeat and tell me things or to get me to move on from the next play or to actually just do what he's asking me to do and be engaged with energy and effort. And look, that all sounds very common sense, but it isn't when you have this perception that you're better than you are, that things should be going in a different way. Like so comical. Like I would put it this way, David. It's like my mindset was, I'm going to tell two-time national championship coach Billy Donovan how he should coach me. The guy that's already sent multiple guys in the NBA. And it was at a point my freshman year, maybe a little bit into the season, where he was like, hey, man, we love you. We want you to be here. But if you're not going to let us coach you, you might as well think about going somewhere else.
Wow.
And this is before, you know, you could transfer and play right away. So I appreciate so much that the way he portrayed that message, because truth without love is brutal. I couldn't have taken that if he just said, you need to transfer. But love without truth, that's just flattery. So he had that perfect dynamic to tell me what I needed to hear. And nowhere in that conversation was he asking for perfection. He was asking for a shift in attitude. And, you know, all those things I was able to achieve at Florida would not have happened if I didn't get confronted there. And again, I wasn't perfect. I still had slippage. I was 18, 19, 20 years old. Like, who you don't just become.
We all do. It's just a matter of how much we got caught.
Dude, exactly. Exactly. You don't just become mature overnight, but as that's why it's so important and so awesome that we play a team sport. You know, you have accountability from your teammates. You have this chemistry and love you form with your guys that helps motivate you to be better. So I'm so grateful for that. And
hey, Patrick, yeah. How long did it take? Because I have a similar experience in high school. My coach, I had a new coach going into my senior year. I have offers from everywhere in the country, or most of the places in the country. And he comes and sits me down. He's a new coach. He's like, hey, if we're going to win a championship, he was like, you got to be the hardest working and the best player. And I'm like, bro, I am your best player. Like, my cocky self.
Yeah.
And he turned that tape on and he showed me picture or video of me loafing. And I was like, dang. Like, he's right. Like, but here's the thing. It's just like with your faith though. Like, you want to go do good, but it ain't like it switches overnight. Like, how long did it take you to start to build habits and start to change some of the things that you were doing?
Going into my junior year, where I really saw I had a chance to be really good. I think at that point, I really understood work ethic. Because you're only, like, when you're so talented in middle school and high school, I wasn't that talented in middle school, but in high school, I walk in, I'm 6'9", 230 pounds, athletic, can run, not a really shoot, just a raw athlete. Like, I can, just off of talent alone, I can beat just about anybody that's going to face me in basketball. But then you go to the next level and you see, like, there's scouting. There's guys just as big as you. Like, this new form strength training program. And it's probably way worse in football. Like, I don't know what your high school regime was and then going into college, but I know it was like, it was a different monster, a different animal. And
especially when you look around that weight room, you're like, where did that mutant come from? Where did that, what? Like, I used to be the dude, man. I'm like, I squatted the most. I benched the most. And you look around, you're like, I watched Ben Watson, Patrick. I watched him bench 590 pounds. Like,
what?
I did not say that wrong. He literally goes down, shoot. And I'm like, what? Like, what is that mutant?
He couldn't throw two reps in there? Are you only gave
I know. Really? Like, seriously, you can't give me more than that, bro? Just gave me that one wet week max. But no, I mean, that, like, you definitely see those mutants. But, like, so I get that. But how about this, man? How did you come to faith? Like, did you grow up in a household that y'all went to church? When was your moment?
Yeah, I grew up in the household, and I remember this journey vividly. I can't remember exactly the kind of church we were going to. It probably was a little bit more of a Baptist, because I do remember, like, it was, people are clapping, people are really getting into it. Yeah, absolutely. Not so
raising them hands and praising.
Raising the hands and praising. And I was so little. So in that, I learned, you learned a lot of basic things. Like, you get exposed to who Jesus is. You get exposed to the books of the Bible, you know, all the songs that help you to remember things, et cetera. I would say, you know, and again, this is from my manly perspective, looking at who I was back then. I could be wrong in this, but I just don't remember carryover from church to the home, if you know what I mean. Like,
oh yeah,
that kind of mindset. And I don't want it. Look, I mean this with absolutely zero disrespect to my parents at all. Even if they did do things in a way that I'm saying, it's not a guarantee that I would still come to the Lord. That is not a guarantee. Looking at myself back to when I got baptized at 11 years old, like, and I'm so grateful looking back. Yes, still saved. But was I completely submitted? You know, and even understanding at 11 years old, 12 years old, I don't think you really truly can grasp why you need Jesus. In terms of, look how filthy and dark in my mind. Like, I have bad thoughts. One sin is enough to separate you from God. And it wasn't until, like, like what I said earlier, when I got to college, of course I had, my faith was something I often mentioned, but did my life align to being a believer? No, I was living a double life. Like with one set of people in the locker room, I'm one guy. And I did. I felt that inner turmoil of like, bro, this ain't really who you want to be. And then I'd be involved with Athletes in Action at retreats. And I went to training camp, which was up in Colorado, and all these other things. And I would say for me, it was getting exposed to someone that truly is living for God. Kevin Sides, like my that. Mentor, where I said, my life is nothing like his. One of us like is that. Wrong. And I was like, and I know it's me. I know it's not him. Like, I got this scripture up on my wall that I put up, Galatians 1:10. Am I seeking the approval of man or of God? And I was seeking the approval of man because who doesn't want to be liked? Who doesn't want to be someone that people fling to? But because I was moving, you know, the goalposts were steadily moving. I had people in my life that didn't need to be in my life. And I was still going to church, but I wouldn't like fully dive in. And Kevin Sides, it was literally after I just did Ultimate Training Camp, which was one of the best experiences I've ever done. Coming back after that, I made some poor decisions, some sin, some that, you know, spread around and ended up getting into Kevin's ears. And going back to what I said earlier, he spoke truth to me in love. Of course, I was taken back by someone calling me out. But I was confronted with the reality of, yeah, Pat, that's who you've been. That's as of now. Like, if someone's a fly on the wall watching your life, they would not say that you were a Christian. And it was at that point where I rededicated myself to Christ. I got baptized again. And yeah, I mean, everything changed. I was still in environments where those old things and old habits, like I couldn't just run away from. I couldn't run away from my teammates. I literally went to college to be on that team with these guys that all have come from different backgrounds, believe different things. And I was so wet behind the ears, I wanted to fit in. More than I wanted to just have this standard that I held myself to. Because I think when you hold a standard, you start to build a reputation and people know, like, oh man, like Pat doesn't do that. I'm not going to even invite him. What's the point of having that conversation with him? He doesn't even entertain that conversation. And look, it's not in a way to be unloving. It's in a way to be like, have boundaries, healthy boundaries that keep you from like making mistake, many of the mistakes I did back
then.
Hey,
it's hard to say no the first time, Pat, but what you find is it gets easier. Like the more you do it, yes, and the more you say no, and then because I'll never forget, I went into college and I was like, I don't drink, guys. And like first couple weeks, if we go out, somebody drink. Well, by the time I'm a junior and senior, same thing with girls. Like I'm staying a virgin until I'm married. Like that was the decision that I had made. Like they pushed me for girls. Well, it was funny, by the end of my sophomore year, like if somebody came up to me and tried to buy me a drink, like, he don't drink. Like they took pride in who I was.
I love that.
Took pride. Like girls come up, they're like, no. He's got a girl. Like, and so it can shift. It starts That's with amazing. Saying no, which is hard. But what I love about your story, man, is your buddy, and he showed you what it looked like. And here's the thing. We can memorize the gospel, Patrick, and everybody listening, and we can have all the words. If you don't live a life worth emulating, people ain't listening. But your most powerful influence is the way you live your life. And the way that guy lived his life showed you it was something different. And everybody out there too, man. Yeah, everyone wants to be liked. But there's such a big difference between like and respected.
Yes.
Like, I want people's respect. I don't care if you like me. Like, your buddy spoke truth into you, spoke love into you. He didn't say it to be a turd. He said it because he liked, he respected you enough, and he had enough respect for where he was coming. Yeah, he loved you enough that he could say something that was hard. The question is for all y'all out there, how do you take it? Like, because that's on you. When you got people in your life that call you on your crap, like, we need those people in our lives, but you right. got to be able to receive that. And you got to be, and listen, it's okay if you get pissed at first. Like, your first reaction is probably going to be like, man, he just called me. Like, what? Don't talk to me like that. Like, and that's cool. Like, but then if we sit back and we listen, like, that's a true friend. Like, that's somebody that's trying to help. And so you start to grow, you start to live your faith, man. Like, talk about your next steps and talk about, man, like, talk about now when you go and you start living, that just because you're doing the right things and just because you're honoring God, it don't mean that adversity's not going to hit you.
Going through this immediate, like, life-changing, humbling thing put me at that point of desperation, almost like the woman with the bleeding. She, the woman in the Bible that
so desperate to seek after Jesus.
Dude, she was so desperate. That's all she had. She tried probably everything at that time to fix the issue she did. And she knew, like, I don't need, which is crazy to think, I don't need to talk to him. I don't need to do some, I just
need, I don't to need grab, a sermon. I don't need to do, I don't need to give
I
him perfume.
To grab the hem of his coat. Like, dude, that is so powerful. And it God inspired me to say, all right, do you believe that in who I am and who I say you are about your life? And I say, yeah, absolutely. Then I just felt, then what are you worried about? What are you not? Yeah, it's, I never promised you that this was going to be easy, but I promised that I'd be with you. I played overseas. I was in Turkey, Greece, Italy, and Israel. I got injured my second year in Greece, and my surgery wasn't done well. I had to get it redone, and I got an infection in my knee after that. This was in like 2017, and I never was the same player after that infection. So my career got shortened because of that, and I ended up coming back home looking for what's the next step. Like, I still kind of wanted to play basketball, but I just knew my body wasn't meeting where my mentality was, so I let it go. And in that year, in 2021, I was like, all right, what's next? I don't know. I get plugged in with Church of 1122. So grateful for that. I got engaged, my job with the SEC Network, and I had another job with Tim Tebow's company. It was a for-profit company, not the foundation. I wish it was with the foundation because he does wonderful work. My ex-wife, she lived in Nebraska. And I don't know if you've been in Nebraska. It ain't nothing to do up there. So I started working for this irrigation company, and it was nice, man. Like, get your hands dirty, get to work super early in the morning, come back home earlier in the day because, like, we had been working since 5 a.m. And on June 29th, it was just another day in my mind. We were finishing up this irrigation pivot. We were transporting these large pieces of equipment. I mean, they're 150 feet long. I think they can go up to 170. So it's a slow process of transporting. We were heading back. I was going 2 miles up the road, casual, not being present. And before I knew it, I'm coming up on this road where a stop sign is 20 feet from me, maybe 30, I don't know. I wasn't speeding, but the truck was old. I was going fast enough that I knew immediately I'm not going to be able to stop. And I couldn't see if any vehicles were coming down this way or that way. Didn't have my seatbelt on. Again, casual. I'm just going 2 miles up the road. Like, what are we talking about here? I turned my car completely parallel to the road because my first instinct was just like, turn, get out of the way. It continues its momentum off the road and it flips over one time. And because it was like 10:30 in the morning. Because I was in complete shock of the moment, I just braced myself up for what was about to happen, which probably is the worst thing to do. Oftentimes, people that are drunk and get in accidents, they don't get injured because they just allow their body to just move with the motions. As soon as that truck landed back on all fours, I felt a pop in my back, and I knew something was wrong. And I mean, I was in shock in terms of like, is this real? Like what? And I called Kevin, I called Whitney, I called my mom. First responder team did a fantastic job getting me out of the truck, and then I got life-flighted. And I'm just in my mind, David, like, what is happening? This is not, like, what? I knew something was wrong because I couldn't move my legs. Everything felt weird. And then I'm in South Dakota, and I see Whitney. Like, she gets there, I believe, right before surgery, and we look at each other in the eyes, and she's crying, I'm crying, because I think it's a moment where we realize, like, all the stuff we were preparing for in terms of marriage, not that it couldn't still happen to be successful, but the way in which we envisioned. I mean, this was 10 days before we were supposed to be married, and all of a sudden, it's like, what now? And I don't have any explanation of this feeling, this peace I got over myself, but I just felt God telling me on that helicopter flight that everything's like, I got you. You're going to be okay. I had no new information. Zero. I had no idea what the future was going to look like. And I mean, gosh, David, that was, if it wasn't for faith, community, probably the way I lived my life before the accident, I don't think I would have been able to overcome and have the determination I had to not to say just beat it, but to overcome in a way that it didn't define me. And I'm living proof of that.
So what is your status now with movement and what you can do on a day in and day out basis?
June 29th of 2022, that's when the accident happened. I think a total hospital stay of about 7 or 8 weeks between two in South Carolina, or not South Carolina, in South Dakota. And then I was in Craig Hospital. And I thought that was going to be the hardest part. Like, I started doing training back in Jacksonville, some walking training, because I did have like a little bit of toe movement.
Like with the harness?
With the harness. Yeah, exactly. I ended up getting a wound from the harness that led to an infection that kept me in the hospital for 150 days in 2023. Like, I had already felt like the initial accident drained the reserves, and like I was just starting to fill them back up slowly. And then I get hit with this. At first, my mindset when I was there in May, it was pretty good. I was pretty faith-filled, but slowly as things kept progressing and being there longer, I mean, my faith and my belief and joy and all that stuff just slowly started going down and down and down, not to a point where I had suicidal thoughts, but the prerequisite for suicidal thoughts sometimes is apathy. All right, God, like, if you want to take me now, I'm cool. I'm good with it. Like, I'm tired of fighting. Like, I feel like there's nothing I can do. And I just remember Paul Washer. And I don't know how I came across this on YouTube when I was in that hospital bed. He said, I don't believe that there's such thing as a good man or a great man or woman of God. And he goes through talking about Moses and the Hall of Faith, those people that are named.
David, all of them, all of them jacked up.
He said, every single one of them realized how weak they are, and they had full dependence on God. If you want to qualify them by being great, that would be the qualification. They knew how insufficient they were. And I was like, yeah, I physically could not change my situation. Mentally, I was a mess. Emotionally, I don't even know what you would call it. Spiritually, I was at that point of complete desperation where I said, God, I have nothing to bring to the table other than asking you to come and give me peace, healing, anything that can just change the way in which I'm seeing it, you know, experiencing this whole sickness. Like, I was like, this can't be the end. Like, I know you had more planned for me. And by the goodness of God, I got healthy and got up out of there. And then the next chapter, it's like, all right, finally out of the hospital, coming back home, that was probably more difficult. Like, you don't think about it.
You ain't got all those people caring for you. You ain't got all those people around all the time.
And now it's like, the onus is on you. So I got really down, more so when I was home. And I'm so grateful that my family, they saw it. That I was struggling. And we had a little intervention, prayed through it.
What did that look like?
Oh, that looked like because
all the family,
mom, dad, and sister. Mom, dad,
sister. They sat you down and did they give you a little talk like your boy back in the day and say, hey?
It was more, even worse, or even more serious. Do you want to live? Do you want to live? What do you want? Yes, it's not easy. They're like, the path that you're on right now is not a healthy one. And my mom, she's been a nurse for 25 plus years. So she knew exactly what she was talking about when she was saying it. And it was at first a little bit of, I got a little defensive at first, but then I was like, you know what? They're right. I can't be in bed all day. I got to push myself. And people might not understand, when you have a spinal cord injury, your circulation is changed, like your whole body. So like, it took me a while to get through the dizziness of just sitting up like this, normally, just sitting up normally. But if I didn't push myself to get in my chair for 15 minutes, all right, we did it. All right, next day, 20 minutes. All right, one of our rules on this board, you can't eat in your room anymore. You got to get out. You need to go up.
Oh, I like that. Get up and go earn it.
Get up and go. Yeah, if you want to eat all your meals, you need to go up front for breakfast or whatever. And sure, it took a process, but I started getting stronger. I started seeing the small wins that I was making in terms of progress. And before you knew it, we started hitting a groove, man. And still things weren't perfect by any means, but I'm not who I am now with that not happening.
I mean, how cool that God's given you a story, an authority. Paul suffered. He talked about his sufferings. He writes about his sufferings a lot. And to suffer is to gain, right? And so you've went through these struggles and these sufferings, and they only enhance now the opportunity that you get to speak to people. So
yes,
it's an awesome, and now you're speaking and you're an author and and God's given you the credibility. And here's the thing. We all got scars, Patrick. Some of them you can see, some of them you can't. So we got some scars. You got some scars. I got some scars that you can't see, but they're there. And people can see your scars, man.
You're right.
They understand that you've been through it. And now what an opportunity, man. What a cool thing you get to do is to go speak life into people. Cause there are people that don't have leg issues that ain't walking. Right? There's people out there that aren't living to the fullness of their life and aren't going and getting, and they're not going to go walk in there and get their food. But now you got an awesome opportunity, man, to help people and encourage them and come aside. And that's why you got patrickyoung.com. That's why you're speaking, I'm sure. But how cool is that, man, just to have that opportunity?
One of the coolest things in it, the pit. Joseph got put into the pit, and the pit was part of his journey into becoming, I don't think if God would have told me, hey, you're going to be spreading a message, it's going to be affecting people, I'm going to use you. If he would have told me, I'd be like, yeah, cool, can't wait. If he would have told me how, I would have said, oh man, I don't.
You good, bro? I'm good.
I don't know about that, but.
Hey, don't forget that Joseph spent all that time in prison too, and he went through some stuff to get to where he got to.
I don't know how my man didn't put hands on the baker when he got when he got out of prison. I don't know how you didn't put hands. Bro, you forgot about me? I told you that you were going to be free, and you just forgot for a year? The most powerful story I have, and this is how I know God is real. This is how I know this is the purpose he called me to. Very first speaking engagement I got, it was in 2022. I go to Johnson & Johnson, and I wasn't ready. I didn't feel like, I was like, I'm not on the other side. What do you mean? But something convicted me. If God opened this door, the worst thing you can do is step into it. It doesn't work out. And then, that's not the path. But if he called you and it does, keep going. So I go, I'm not, I would say, I'm much more polished of a speaker communicator now, but I go there, I give my best. And that self-judgment as I leave, I could have done better in this and that, blah, blah, blah. Year goes by, and they bring me back. So I must have did okay. I went through a lot more life. Obviously, a year is a lot of change. More life, that hospital stay. I had written a book at that point, and I felt more confident coming into this event. And I speak, and I feel like, man, I killed it this time. I felt really good about that opportunity. The event was hybrid, half people, a good amount of people in person, a good amount virtual, both times. There's a gentleman just waiting to talk to me after the second time I spoke. And he says, "Mr. Young, I want you to know you saved my life." I never met this man before, never seen him. He said, "I had the method, the note, and the plan for how I was going to take my life. And seeing you in the middle of your circumstances come out here and show up and give all that you've given and doing, it inspired me like crazy." I mean, he's crying, I'm crying, I'm just overwhelmed with, like, you know, and you always think this. I hope this message is for one person. But how often do you actually get to meet that person? And from there, I just knew this is a calling, this is purpose filling. I'm not doing surgery on people to save their lives, but maybe I'm doing something in their soul. God's speaking through me. And from that point on, I just knew, like, nothing's going to stop what God has placed in my heart. And I'm going to just squeeze every ounce of influence and potential I have. I wouldn't replace it or change it, knowing that, you know, I could look back on and put my head on the pillow and say, you were obedient even when you didn't know what was going to happen.
Well, and I think there's a lesson there too, man. I've seen so many people in life that, you know, like that speaking gig, like you go to it the first time in the first year and you're like, I'm not qualified. Well, yeah, you are. You are qualified. You're qualified. You're called. And here's the thing. Like, we've got to walk in opportunities, man. Like, we can't always, yes. If you're going to wait till you're qualified and you're going to wait till you're at the top of your game, you ain't never going to start. You will never pull the trigger. So, I mean, so glad that you did. Similar type of thing when I started speaking is I did a first engagement in Alabama, Trustville, Alabama, right after I got fired, like right after I got canned. And you're kind of like, crap, got fired, coming up on stage. You know,
bro,
usually they say good.
I was so mad.
Well, thank you.
I didn't even know you, and I was mad. I was so mad.
I was like, usually they say good things about you when you come on stage. Like, they're probably gonna be like, you know, you remember him from game day. Oh, he got fired. But I go up there and I speak to this middle school and high school, and there's 800 something kids, and you know, got to share my faith, and 100 and something kids walked forward and accepted Christ. And a guy was like, "Hey, idiot, like, you think the TV crap is anything? Like, this is bigger." We'll end with this, my man. What's next for you? Like, what are your goals, man? Like, what do you want to find in life? What do you want to go do? What do you want to accomplish? Like, not, and I'm not just talking about speaking and stuff like that, but like, what do you want to go do now?
I think I'm doing now almost kind of what, you know, you just want exposure, growth, impact. Probably my favorite things I get to do now are, I know a caseworker here in Jacksonville. She reaches out to me if there's someone that's had a catastrophic injury similar to mine that may be able to need some encouragement. And it's getting a chance to go to people in that vulnerable state that they are in, that I once experienced. It might not be the exact same, but like, that's been so fulfilling because I get to have relationships with these people. I get to, you know, encourage them and pray, like, know them and pray for them. Like, of course, the foundation, we just raised like $42,000 in June for the fundraising event, and that's awesome. But like, actually getting to meet those people where they are, the ones I want to serve and inspire and try to help, like, there's been nothing better than that for me. And this is it, you know, it's not only just in that aspect. If God wants to keep using me to do that or whatever, I'm pretty grateful for where I am. I want to keep working with the SEC network as long as I can, keep speaking. I mean, in 5 years, even though I'm not a big believer in all the like 5-year plans and 10-year plans, but if I did have one, I want to get married. I want to have kids. I want to be back in a space. Like, having a family is something that I wish I would have desired more than anything back then. because I always thought, I'll get to it when I'm 35. I'll get to it later kind of mindset. And now, like, even after going through a divorce, I just realized how much I enjoyed being a dad, being a husband, like being that leader of the household. I am going to wait on God's timing and go from there. That's it, brother.
Yeah, I think the, you know, the timing part is so important. And just, you know, I found, you know, and this is what I found, man. When I'm making a decision and something's important to me, man, like the Bible talks about prayer. Prayer is so important. But the Bible always talks about, you want to put a prayer on steroids or put some Crisco on that thing and really light it fast. Like, yeah. Pray and fast. Yeah. And really, like ask God to close doors, like slam them shut. Like, as soon as I got fired, I started getting calls from different people. I'm like, God, just slam it shut or spin it wide open. Like, don't allow me to get involved in this decision making. Like, absolutely. I know I'll screw it up. And what you're doing is cool, man. Continue to inspire. Continue to live. Continue to show off those wounds, man. Like, because that's – we need more of that in this world, I think, than anything. Like – we ain't got it all figured out. Like, just because we're believers and we're telling you these things, it doesn't mean we're perfect. But we do know the one who is perfect. Yeah. And we get the opportunity to plug into his power. And I'm just so glad you have, man. Thank you for your time. And y'all go to patrickyoung.com. Speaking, you know, book writing. There's no telling what it will continue to be able to morph into and become. But we'll definitely be praying for you, man. And we need to find you that woman. We need to find you a good woman.